Okay, welcome back. So, good morning. Today is Thursday, September 17. And for those who are attending regularly, you'll notice there was a break last week. My computer had a problem. We had a lightning strike in my room, but I'm okay. And this will, just for people to know, this will be periodic, that there'll be pauses in the weekly presentations, meaning I won't be doing either Sutta Nipata or the Nityananda reading from Chittakashita, Voice of the Self. Every week, the weekly will be interrupted by once a month, where in the groups from which these talks are derived, there'll be just open discussion in those groups, which are closed groups, and just to talk about personal process and world affairs and things like that. So there'll be some regular interruption every month with at least one of the classes, one of the weeks not having presentations from either Nityananda or the Sutta Nipata reading. But otherwise, we'll keep running along weekly. And so today is the talk on Nityananda, episode 26. Last time, we left it at, in the middle of page 15 of Voice of the Self. This is page 39 of the PDF of Voice of the Self, translation of Chittakashita by M.P. Pandit, which first was published in 1962, So this is the version I'm going to stay with and focus on. And what I'd like to do is first read the verse that was the last verse last time, then again the middle of page 15, then read through pages 16 and 17, and maybe the top of 18. Just read through the verses, because I think I think it's very satisfying, and I think it's salubrious for us to listen to the verses without commentary, one after another. And in fact, at the end of the whole thing, I might just do several hours of reading the verses with no commentary, just for anybody who wants to hear it. There's another presentation of Chittakashita on YouTube, I think it's 3 hours, where I believe a woman read it through with no commentary, and I think that kind of presentation is very helpful, and I think this is the best translation. And therefore, to get as close to as possible to the vibratory influence and consciousness of the speaker, Nityananda, for me to just speak the verses without commentary, and then pull back and go from the start of that reading to do commentary on the verses, I think that's useful. So last time, the last verse I'll read first, and then I'll read the next verse as the first of this week. So middle page 15, Voice of the Self, Nityananda's Chittakashita. Seat yourself in the carriage and go to Kashi, Varanasi. Reach the city of Shivananda, bliss of Shiva. Go to the city of Shanti, peace. Terminate at the city of Brahmananda, the bliss of Brahma. And the new material for this week. And again, bear in mind that he was speaking from trance, generally. In some cases, he's addressing the personal process of devotees in the room. He's possibly addressing the deeper needs of the people in the room, whether they know it or not. He's also speaking of what he's experiencing in the moment. He's also giving basic teachings on Advaita Vedanta, the goal and the path and the process. And so those are multiple intentional vectors or objects to which he's addressing his verses, objects and you know people and purposes. So let me start the new material, middle page 15. Know what is man? In life, he alone is man who has no mind. The sannyasin, the yogin with equality of self. What is the state when you look at darkness coming straight from the sun? If you look at darkness after gazing at the sun for 5 minutes, indeed, you see nothing. So it must be. See with the inner eye. A good banana is tasty to eat, but if unripe, it tastes astringent. Both, however, grow on the same tree. It is time that makes the difference. If you plant a coconut in the earth, you do not have the plant forthwith, meaning right away. First the sprout, then the plant which grows into the tree. The tender coconut gets plucked by the touch of hand, not so the hardened one. So should the mind be in possession of itself. Whatever may be said, whatever may be spoken by anybody, that is the object to be achieved. Fulfill your object in the same way. Persist and act without fear, even at the risk of losing the neck. Belabor mentally, but not manually, by stick or hands. Tie up without cord, that is the true fulfillment. Thought creates desire, and desire leads to work. Works bring fruit, and the fruit of bad work is sin. Mind at the root. No mind, no talk, neither going nor coming. Nothing is done. To know to talk in English, but not to write in it, is not enough to pass the examination. Both must be known. Then alone can one pass. Even a child of 5 knows there is God, but not where he is. The sun sees all, but hardly one or two in a lock, meaning 10 million, I think, look at him, meaning look at the sun. 3/4 of men in the world walk downward. The middlings are less than a quarter. Few are good in deeds, but more do the evil. He is the master who fuses chit, meaning consciousness or mind, essence of sentience, in sat, which also can mean truth or righteousness. He is the master who fuses chit in sat. Upadhi is the tree of peace. To this tree of peace attain. He is a brahmachari, which is the first of the stages of life in the Indian system, classic system, which is basically the celibate student phase. He is a brahmachari who is ever one with Brahman, whether he be an untouchable or anyone else, meaning any caste. To hold in hand a staff and the Gita, to wear saffron robes, and to argue with everyone, these do not make a Swami. Gold melted in fire emits a luster. Similarly, mind similarly must desire and passion be destroyed within. Activity within, exertion within. No man is always in the same state. Of a man, even with the worst tendencies, nature can change in 5 moments. There is no light of the sun when there are clouds. The moment the clouds are scattered, the sun is visible. Om is the city of peace. Om is the form of peace. Salutation to Om. Om as the original vibration of Brahman, or of the Creator. There is no rule in matters of food. It is not that you should not eat. Eat you must, but a little. Little, half the stomach, food. A quarter, water. Sleep not in excess. Fire burns everything. It has no distinction of good and bad. So too, those who work may eat anything. Those who do not work know not what it is to be done. They get indigestion. One whose fire is active can eat anything. It gets digested. Sleep, but sleep little. Do not eat to the brim. Have always a uniform measure. There is fear when one has a chain on the neck, earrings in the ears, and ring on the finger. There is fear as long as they are on the body. Money is the cause of fear. No gold on the person, no fear. Fear is imagination of the mind. There is no fear to the subtle eye. Fear exists only to the outer physical eye. It is impossible for an eyeless blind man to perceive and speak of a cart. So also there is no place for one who has no initiating guru, meaning no place for fear. And I'm not sure about that. And the last quote, bridging pages 17, 18 on the PDF. Anna means food. Anna is prana, prana meaning universal energy. Anna is prana. Anamaya is pranamaya. Anna, and I'll explain that. Anna food, anamaya is basically food illusion. It really means the illusion, the the illusory nature of the experience of sustenance by food. Is pranamaya, meaning the illusory nature of sustenance by prana, or the illusory nature of prana. Anna, again, food, is prana. Anamaya, illusory food, meaning the illusion of our life sustained by food, is pranamaya, the illusion of existence sustained by prana, perhaps. Anna is prana, anamaya is pranamaya. If wealth in the hands is stored in the chest without needless thought, there's plenty of it. But if something is taken out and spent, then there is diminution. The treasure is life. The chest is the buddhi. The chest, not your physical chest, the chest holding food or wealth. The chest does not ask for the contents. Similarly, there is no need of anything from without if one sees what is within himself. If the power of prana, one or with the power of prana, one is endowed with, if the power of prana one is endowed with is directed within and led to the Brahma Randara, meaning the crown chakra, there is no need of anything else. To release from the downward course and direct to the royal path, the middle way of the royal path, is real sustenance. And so I'll have to get that into that later, but that'll be the last quote, or the last verse of the read-through. Now let's back up and do a little commentary. You can see each one is quite deep and rich, and my comments are, you know, of my own level of understanding, which is partial and inadequate to be complete, but perhaps helpful. And we start with the paragraph, the verse, know what is man. In life, he alone is man who has no mind, the sannyasin, the yogin with equality of self. What is the state when you look at darkness coming straight from the sun? If you look at darkness after gazing at the sun for 5 minutes, indeed, you see nothing. So it must be. See with the inner eye. So seeing with the inner eye, with buddhi, not seeing objects in the physical world with the physical eye, knowing, knowing that which the mind may know independent of physical sight, is akin to seeing with the inner eye, is akin to gazing, after gazing at the sun for 5 minutes, looking around, one sees nothing. This is again on the theme of outer inner, dark and light, many and one, illusion versus reality. To know what is a man, to know what you are, to know what is I, one must use the inner I. Right? So the inner I reveals the true I. The inner I, E-Y-E, reveals the true I with a capital I for Irving. And so the true I or true nature is revealed inwardly by inner knowing, which is very much akin to the physical process. After you look at the sun for 5 minutes, if you can, or some bright object, after that, you will not see forms clearly, distinctly. You're blinded by the light. And so, blinded by the light is also equality of self, or equality of sight. Song San, I don't know why I thought of this, but third patriarch of China in the Chan Zen Tan Dhyana tradition in Chinese Buddhism, said, the great way is easy for those who have no preferences. Yeah. Well, if you have no preferences, yeah, sure. Then you're free of desire or grasping, aversion, ignorance, three poisons or three unwholesome roots. So free of grasping, aversion, ignorance means free of clinging and craving, which really would mean free of ignorance, leads one to see truly beyond duality, beyond believing that duality is a final reckoning of existence. And that's akin to equality of self. Knowing that multiplicity is a veiled presentation of the one. Akin to being unable to see forms after staring at the sun or a bright light object. And that's the inner eye revealing that what the physical eye sees as many and different is also a one of equality. And that is also then turned to self-awareness. You know, so when you know the self, you see there's no self. I think that Dogen, from Sōtō tradition of Chan or Zen Buddhism, Zen Japan, Chan China, said something like, the way or the path is of to study the self, and to study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is something like, you know, to see the awakened nature of all things, something like that. It's a rough paraphrase. So to study the self, or to know man, is to use the inner eye to put one's mind in a position where revelation can happen. You can't force revelation, but you can be in a position where insight arises, insight as to true nature of self and the many, or a realization of unity. You know, the law of one is a lot more than words in the raw material. It's the reality that the many is one, and that one is boundless light. And then there's a source of boundless light, which is the boundless one, intelligent infinity, or one infinite creator, or Parabrahman. And going beyond time and space is going beyond the many through the one back to source. So he's talking about that as aspects of, you know, the way of the path. Then, a good banana is tasty to eat, but if unripe, it tastes astringent. True. However, both grow on the same tree. Right. And so it's a time that makes the difference. Likewise, if I eat meat, and he doesn't seem to care about eating meat. I do some work, and so I eat some meat. Some raw meat in the bowl with, vegetables uncooked and this and that before cooking is not quite lovely to eat. And after cooking, just by time and the heat, it's, for me, tasty and nutritious and, a meal. So simply by the application of heat and time, the raw being cooked brings phenomena from a state of unripeness to ripeness, brings the mind and the self over time and practice and development from immaturity to maturity. And so there's a matter of time. Time makes a difference. Likewise, planting the coconut takes time. A good banana, I'll read it through. A good banana is tasty to eat, but if unripe, it tastes astringent. Both, however, grow on the same tree. It is time that makes the difference. If you plant a coconut in the earth, you do not have the plant forthwith, I mean right away. First the sprout, then the plant which grows into the tree. The tender coconut gets plucked by the touch of hand, not so the hardened one. So should the mind be in possession of itself. Whatever may be said, whatever may be spoken by anybody, that is the object to be achieved. Fulfill your object in the same way. Persist and act without fear, even at the risk of losing the neck, meaning your neck. Belabor or do labor mentally, but not manually, by stick or hands. Tie up with cord. That is the true fulfillment. And that's yoga. Yok as to yoke. Y-O-K-E. English word. To bind or tie up as a goal or the goal of all Ashtanga yoga or all limbs or all types of yoga, including bhakti yoga and pranayama yoga and hatha yoga and raja yoga, karma yoga. The goal is a right restraint of the harmful and distorted and unnecessary, so that the false and the harmful and the illusory or the distorted is tied up with no cord, no effort at the end of the path. Way, right? Taoist term meaning no action, really meaning no interference, no artifice, no fabrication, like no skanda, no sankara, no fourth skanda. No, it doesn't mean don't act. It means don't interfere. Act in harmony. Just like Ra saying, the crystallized healer has no will. Doesn't mean he doesn't act. It means there's no will against the way, the way that's best for all, as best as anyone can do that. And that's leads to something akin to the fulfillment, true fulfillment, he says, Nityananda says, about being tied up without cord. It doesn't mean bound and restrained. It means, I would say, something akin to a more esoteric phrase in Pali Buddhism associated with the mind inclining towards nirvana. The mind inclines toward nirvana is my experience of that, if I have, is that after some time of years, really, of practice, at least for me, the mind is naturally preferring non-proliferation. The mind naturally doesn't overthink unless, you know, there's some heavy catalytic triggering to, you know, some panic or some kind of excessive mental state. Normally, without that triggering, the mind appreciates stillness or the deathless, non-proliferation, non-production, which could be seen as a natural chit yoga, chitta yoga, or manasik yoga, the yoga of the lower mind that is rested in Buddha, the higher mind or wisdom. But it's not the wisdom of thinking, oh, I understand this and that, or analysis. It's the buddhi of seeing clearly the equal nature, both appearance and true nature, as much as one can. And I'm not finished, so I don't know fully anything. But there is a... it's very much like the 10 ox herding pictures in Chinese Buddhism. At a certain point, the bull ox is no longer unruly without without cord, without rope, without hurting the ox, the mind is no longer troublemaking, is no longer proliferating samskara, is no longer overthinking or stuck in emotional charge triggerings and things like that. The mind is naturally quiet, peaceful, knowing, as much as, you know, I mean, this is beyond my attainment, but is naturally free as at a steady state. So silence of mind at a steady state, as Ross said, like samadhi, but it's actually freedom at a steady state, beyond just some, you know, temporary quiet or long-term quiet. So there is unripe and there is ripe. That which is unripe becomes ripe with time. One must be in possession of oneself and know the difference between ripe, unripe, and possession of oneself. The mind must be in possession of itself. Doesn't mean I am in possession of myself, actually. Mind in possession of itself means a stable, quiet mind. Also, in the face of whatever others say, follow your path, be true to your deepest truths, you know, be true to your truth, right? Or be true to your understanding of your deep values. Know your values, know what you value. And, you know, the good and the true and the beautiful is an easy way of talking about green, blue, indigo, four, fifth, six chakras. That's the heart of a positive path, if we're talking about path. The true to the good and virtue and harmlessness and love and kindness, and the true or discernment, clarity, understanding, moving, answering your questions. Don't persist in questions. Answer your questions as best you can. And if they're not important, drop them. And if they are important, don't you know, stop till you get some understanding. And some partial understanding is enough. Total understanding is actually generally unnecessary to sufficiently answer a question or get out of the dukkha of confusion. And then there's the good and the true and the beautiful is of spirit or of the one, or seeing with equality, equal sight, equal sightedness, knowing that there's an outer and an inner, and the inner, or God's light, the logoic light, is the true nature of all that we see as the many and relatively defined, you know. See all beings as God. All beings are God, Nityananda said. It's very hard to do that with the evil humans on this world, but it's a great training. And so, in possession of itself, beyond fear, stick with what you believe, be persistent in what you know benefits you and others, and eventually there'll be a kind of clarity, virtue, wellness, equanimity, without effortful restraint. Next, top of page 16. Let me see the time. Thought creates desire, and desire leads to work. Works bring fruit, and the fruit of bad work, looks like a typo here, the fruit of bad work is sin. Mind is at the root. No mind, no talk. Neither going nor coming. Nothing is done. To know to talk in English, or to know how to talk in English, but not to write in it, is not enough to pass the examination. Both must be known. Then alone can one pass the test. Oh, some creature in the bamboo grove. So we have thought, word, and deed. Here we have thought, desire, and work. The basis of karma is all of them. And one can say, while thought, word, and deed, speech, and deed, or physical activity, are most potent karmic fruit producers, karmic seedings, right? The basis of speech and physical behavior, of course, is mind. And so the root of karmic basis is mind. The root of karmic production is mind. And its executors are speech and physical activity behavior, so-called work. In Buddhism, in the Eightfold Understanding of the Fourth Noble Truth, the Eightfold Noble Path, the Shila associated, Sila, virtue, morality, ethics associated portions of the Eightfold Path that are specified are right livelihood, right action, right speech. Right thought, I don't remember if right thought is part of the Eightfold division, the Eightfold classification, but certainly there's right view. With right view comes right thought, of course. And so most potent physically, karmically, obviously, is speech and deed, physical. Yet its basis of their basis, of course, is thought. So thought, you know, if you want to change your life, change your mind. Because your life, our life, the phenomena around us are thought created. Created by our thought. By the way that we form beliefs and opinions and view. And so that's very clear and obvious. So as a man thinketh, so shall he live. So shall he, as a man thinketh, as one thinks. I mean, this is back to James Allen, I guess. By the nature of one's thought and preferences, like Sung San said. One fashions belief and view, and thus speech and deed. And that's karmic seeding, karmically basing, karmic basis. That then leads to fruit, good or bad. Meaning painful or pleasant, like the eight worldly winds, which one should know. Basically, you know, although there's no good or bad from the perspective of true nature, there is karmic production that is experienced as painful or pleasant. There is karmic production or experience and phenomena or catalyst that comes at us, right? Like body, the nature of body or body experience, and feelings in the body, and thoughts and mental process, and people in our life, and situations, and all sorts of things that are supportive or challenging to our continued development. What's supportive is commonly called good karmic return, good karma. What's painful or challenging, difficult, impeding, hindering, obstructive, a hardship, is generally called the karmic return of bad karma or bad karma returning. So, okay, we can use the terms good and bad relatively, because there is a relative reality to the experience of pleasure and pain, or support versus challenge, or blessing, benefit versus hardship, toil and turmoil, and angst. So, meanwhile, it's all mind at root, and then in the state of no mind, and, you know, there was a Buddhist school, some Westerner wrote a book on Zen called On Having No Head. There was, I think, a tradition, later Theravadan or early Mahayana, I forgot the name of the group Buddhism that we're talking about, no mind. I mean, I think Huangpo, Obaku, the teacher of Rinzai, or Linqi, talked about no mind. Different teachers in different traditions obviously teach different ways. In Zen, even though it's still one lineage of Mahayana Buddhism, likewise, all the teachers taught differently too. And so Huangpo, Linqi's teacher, I believe talked about no mind. Certainly some other of the early Chan teachers did. They got that straight from India. no mind, no talk. No mind doesn't mean I'm a dummy or a tree stump, like tree stump samadhi. It means manas has been subjugated by buddhi. And the discursive, busy mind, the ox, has been herded or tamed. Ox herding also means mind taming, which also means yoga. You know, manasa yoga, manasic yoga, or chit yoga, chitta yoga, the yoga of transforming mind. Basically, it's lower triad chakra blockages released, of course. It's the lower triad blockage releasing. Discursive mind, busy mind, generally comes from emotional blockage. This is a little clue and a little important point. I was wondering, which of the three poisons or unwholesome roots where can we find discursive, busy mind, monkey-mindedness? Well, you can say there's desire and there's aversion, but there's also ignorance. And I think it's mainly aversion to certain uncontrolled emotional process, or an aversion to freely feeling certain painful emotions, that leads some minds to be monkey-minded and chattering, and people who can't sit down and do meditation. I mean, when we can't, or we just get wired or overstimulated. That can be from fatigue, it can be from over-reading, but the mind that can't stop talking to itself, thinking, generally is unwilling to feel certain painful emotions in the body, in the body-mind, and be with that. And that's a kind of aversion that comes out of, that supports ignorance. But when the mind is, this no mind doesn't mean can't think. It means a quiet awareness. That mind, personal mind, goes to transpersonal love wisdom. And with what is the mind of high green, blue, indigo, fourth, fifth, sixth chakra activation? Right? That's a question. What's the condition of samskara and consciousness, fourth and fifth skandhas, for the being that has high development of green, blue, indigo, four, five, six? Well, I imagine it's a limpid, clear, quiet, peaceful, heartful, feeling capable, but not proliferating thought and emotion mind. Meaning, it's not an emotionalistic mind. It's not emotion. It's not. It doesn't prefer emotionalism. It doesn't prefer mentalism. It inclines towards the deathless, or silence, or being, or rest, silence of mind in a steady state. And so, likewise, I think he's saying at the end, it's not enough to talk, and this may be some devotee in the room that was associated with looking to study English or go abroad. It's not enough to be able to talk if you can't write. It's not enough to be able the path demands more than careful working, meaning do your danda or responsibility. It also requires mind transformation. So one's expression in speech and behavior, as well as one's inner basis in mind and thought, all need to be transformed. Both must be known. Then one can continue on the path. Or the path is both mind transformation leading to thought and view upgrading our view, and then not attached to view, so that the mind is a pleasant place, a quiet, you know, lovely, sacred place. Then naturally, the outer expression in speech and behavior or deed will be improved, will follow along. Going on, middle of page 16. Even a child of 5 knows there's God, but not where he is. The sun sees all, but hardly one or two in a lock, again, I think it's 10 million, look at him, meaning look at the sun. Three-fourths of men in the world walk downward. The middlings are less than a quarter. Few are good in deeds, but more do the evil. So, knowing there's God is a knowing from a pure mind. I mean, the purity of children, particularly, you know, 3 to 8, or 3 to 5 or 6 or something, is that the distortions of human culture haven't taken hold or root yet, even though there is a karmic stream of their past lives that is not fully purified. There is, you know, God is with the children. The children, that type of a child, is with God. And that's why those that harm children are the worst of the worst. And, you know, like Yeshua said, something like, better a man has a millstone tied to his neck, thrown to the depths of the ocean, than to hurt one of the little ones here. One way of reading that is, better you're killed in a brutal way than you incur the karma of hurting a child of God, a child with God, a child within whom or through whom God lives and shows. And that purity of mind knows God, or has a natural spiritual awareness of a source, a benevolent, omnipotent source of all there is, that's all. Only distorted humans can't accept that, generally, and animals, with whom they are closely resembling. But not where he is. And that's an important point, because where is God? God is everywhere. That's the answer. I asked a Mormon on the road on their bicycles, where is God? Dude pointed to the sky. So, as far as I know, all is the one infinite creator in the form of light, in the forms of light, in the multiple forms of light. All is the one infinite creator in multiple forms of light. And that's where he is. The sun sees all, but hardly one in a million look at him. The sun, meaning the Logos or Brahma, or you know, the one infinite creator. 75% of humans walk downward. Well, the repeater rate here is probably 90% or 85. Probably, being generous, probably I would give the harvest account. I've always said this, you know, 7 to 12% harvest rate. Somebody will talk to me. Whoever's upstairs, when I'm upstairs, and we can talk about it after dimensional shift, you can hold me to that. My prediction is 7 to 14% harvest rate. And so, he said 75% walk downward. Looks to me like 85 to 90% will repeat. The middlings are less than a quarter. I'm not sure if that's the right word, middlings. He really means those that are in the middle, meaning those that are not walking downward, but not necessarily walking upward, or in the middle between the material and ascending the spiritual, are less than 25%. That's true. And so, meanwhile, you know, Ross said that over half, I remember, so as far as I remember, over half the souls on Earth have some conscious participation with higher self programming catalyst before birth, because of green reactivation. So probably 60% of Earth humanity is positively oriented. I mean, maybe in the end 90% would be, but it's probably something, I mean, I would say, I don't even know if you have 10% service of self here, but you could say 60-30-10, which is a clean breakdown, just as I believe third density planets in this galaxy are divided. It's just like Ra said, in terms of the third density orientation breakdown. 60% of 3D planets in the galaxy are positively oriented, 30% are mixed, and 10% are negative, serves the self. Likewise, here on Earth, I think probably it's very likely that 60% of humanity is solidly on the positive path, although far from harvestability. 30% are mixed up, and not really on either path, clearly. Pre-polarized, we can say, non-polarized. Also, obviously, in creature in my attic. I have all sorts of things happen, you know, when you talk certain, when metaphysical charge is in play, all sorts of weird things happen. When I start meditating, commonly I hear strange noises, like pressure changes in the room or things on the roof, and then they just end. It's a when you kind of enjoy the metaphysical, the interdimensional, the other side perks up a bit. 60 positive, 30 mixed or pre-polarized or non-polarized, and 10% surface of self negative. That may be the case here today. So few are good in deeds, but more do the evil. Yeah, sorry. More do the evil because even of the 60% that are positively oriented, there really are very few people in this world that are committed to the positive path. It's a commission to truth and harmlessness. And you know, I'm not perfect. I have desires, but there is a basic commitment to goodness and truth for those on the positive path, those that are solidly settled on the positive path. And that's really few here. It doesn't mean they're bad, but they surely cannot be called virtuous. Going on, he is the master who fuses chit in sat, meaning mind or mentation or consciousness, you know, fourth and fifth skanda activity, the mental thought production, like manas, with the wisdom higher function, buddhi, in consciousness itself, in truth, sat. I mean, there are different translations for all these Sanskrit words. Sat as truth. Truth means reality. And there's truth that can be put into there's absolute and relative. And so to say the sky is blue and the tree is brown and the leaves are green, that's a relative truth. That's relative sat. And then there's absolute. And the absolute is inconceivable and unutterable, ultimately, or beyond conception or beyond word. You know, even to say unity, to say all the many is one, obscures the fact that from a perspective of unity or from the awareness in late sixth density or higher self, there is no many. From our perspective, in, you know, apparently, experientially, in the many seeking the one, we see the many as apparently real. We can say that, but from the perspective of unity or higher self looking down, from the perspective of the one looking at the apparent many, from that perspective, I think it can be experienced or said that there is no many. And so it's a little different, you know? The many and the one look different, depending on whether one is currently in the many or in the one. And you can say that there's no division and it's all just silly talk. That's fine too. But actually, the way of talking can be useful. The key is not to get lost in thought. As Buddhadasa said, they asked him in southern Thailand years ago, Ajahn Buddhadasa, Buddha Dat, what do you think about the city, or what do you think about humanity, or what do you think about the world or people, something like that? He said, "Lost in thought." Yes, sirree. So when chit is fused in sat, there's nobody's lost in thought. Upadi, I just didn't look this up before. Upadi is the tree of peace. Let me see if I can do this quickly. Just a moment. No, I can't. Wait. Let's see if I can find this quickly. Yep. Upadhi Wisdom Library 22 definitions, a limiting adjunct, a condition, a limitation, a determinant, a qualification. The illusion of limits, as Ross said, that here in the octave, where there is the appearance of light, intelligent energy, which is the basis of the seven rays, which is the basis of form in all dimensions, we experience this light, seven-dimensional light, nama-rupa, the light basis of thought and form and outer inner and a sense of self. That gives us what's called the illusion of limits. The illusion of limits is similar to upadhi. The condition of, it's also a Sanskrit technical term meaning fraud. Lovely. So yeah, that's why it's called illusion. The illusion of limits is the fraud of apparent conditionality and qualification. A qualifying attribute, a very subtle word, or a mode, a category. And so, very high-level term in Vedantic philosophy. Upadhi is the tree of peace. Ooh. So what? Qualifying determinant, or the illusion of limits, is the tree of peace? This is the unity of the apparent and the essential, or the fusion of chit and sat, the unification of the relative and the absolute. Form is emptiness, and emptiness is form. Samsara is nirvana, this kind of thing. To this tree of peace attain. This is a very subtle. So to say upadhi is shanti, is shantipur. Shantipur as the village of peace is a very subtle way of putting it. The tree of peace. I don't know the word for tree in Sanskrit. But this is, again, the fusion of the apparent lower with the apparent higher, or with the relative and the absolute, or the self and the one. Going on, he is a brahmachari who is ever one with Brahman, whether he be an untouchable or anyone else, whatever his caste. Nityananda, like Gautama, many great teachers redefine common philosophical terms. Happens all the time. I mean, I'm doing that. So interpretation or explanation is commonly a reframing or reconception of a certain word, a certain phrase or terminology. To comprehend, to explain, to understand, there's a reforming, rephrasing, reinterpreting needed. And so here he's reinterpreting or reconceiving the term brahmachari, not simply as a physical matter, but as a mental, spiritual development or stage or attainment. So brahmachari means the acharya of Brahma, which is again the state, commonly simply put, a phase of a celibate studenthood in the five phases of traditional Hindu culture. Or tradition. And so whether you're of one caste, whether you're a Brahmin high caste or not, that's not important in his view. What's important is that you're one with Brahman, which means the again, the relative and the absolute at one, the individual and the unified at one. And so, again, holding a staff in your hand, reading the Gita, saffron robes, and arguing, right? The thicket of views, the argumentative, the one that's lost in the sauce of view, those don't make true Swami, of course. But, you know, you'd be surprised, or I'd be surprised, or I am surprised that, I mean, look, within the 60% that are positively oriented, I mean, I wouldn't think that many of the 30% that are non-polarized or not even on either path, clearly, would do sannyasi. But the sannyasi, the swami, the sadhu, coming out of the 60% that are positively oriented but not enough for graduation. Pride remains. The ox has not been herded or pacified fully. The mind falls to pride, conceit, commonly, and thinks that the outer is a sign of sanctity. You know, when I went to Ubud in Bali, looking like a normal nobody, I was generally taken as a normal nobody. I guess I'm a normal nobody, a bozo on the bus. Meanwhile, I could say a lot of things to answer a lot of questions and clarify a lot of stuff for a lot of people. And that's what I did, and I enjoyed it, and they enjoyed it, and everybody's happy. But if I came there with a yellow saffron robe and a bowl, ooh, and I looked like a matted-haired ascetic, immediately I'd have an audience to stand around or sit around and ask, you know, please teach us and save us or help us. Just like that, because of the outer. Mm. So, next, bottom page 16, and we're getting close to the end. This might be one of the last verses to read. Gold melted in fire emits a luster. Similarly, must desire and passion be destroyed within. Activity within, exertion within. No man is always in the same state. Of a man, even with the worst tendencies, nature can change in 5 moments. There is no light of the sun when there are clouds. The moment the clouds are scattered, the sun is visible. So we're talking about time and change, light and dark, bad and good. In a moment, again, with the application of time or heat, time and heat, the sun, or teaching, or gnosis, even a very negatively acting fellow can turn to virtue and sanctity. It doesn't happen that often, but it can. There were certain notorious bad guys around Gautama, Devadatta, and there was another, Angulimara. I think it's Angulimara. Means necklace, shrunken head, dead skull necklace, Angulimala. Mala, you know, right? Like the mala beads. Angulimala means something like head mala, meaning he killed a lot of people and took their heads or something. That was his big calling card. Both of them, Angulimala and Devadatta, I believe became monks and achieved Arahant, or one of the 4 levels of attainment. So, yeah, and just like when you wake up from a nightmare, it's as if it never happened. When we leave this planet, it will be as if we woke from a dream. When one is free of certain wrong view, it's as if one woke from a dream or a nightmare. I remember the first time I realized that the sun is always shining above the clouds. It's not that it's a cloudy day, but it's not that the cloudy day has no sunshine. The sunshine is bright ever, always above the clouds. This is an important point, actually. And so, God is, truth is, light is, love light is, peace is, the moment contains love, whether we know it or not. doesn't mean we should expect to be happy all moments, because everything comes and goes, everything passes. No man is always in the same state. And so there are a lot of spiritual people who wrongly try to stay in the same state all the time. I should always be well and happy. Impossible, unless you're a higher attainment. But even then, they're not thinking, I'm well and happy. Now I'm well and happy. I'm still well and happy. Of course not. Of course not. The wellness or equanimity, samatha, tranquility, upekkha, equanimity, shanti, peace, those states are not conceived for those who can dwell therein, because there's no thing to dwell therein. You know, dwelling in equanimity is not dwelling in equanimity. It's being without a distortion, disruption, triggering emotional charge, and disharmony. Being without that, you know, the real is what remains when Maya is dissipated. You know, the sun is always shining. It's just temporary cloud cover. And this is a very cloudy phase of Earth humanity, obviously. The tribulation, the pressuring of this time at the end of the third density cycle, akin to a heavily overcast sky, the cloudy collective of Earth humanity, is one way to put it. And so, heavy cloud cover at the present time in the collective consciousness of Earth humanity. But behind the clouds is always the sun. And so, this notion of desire and passion destroyed within, for those who are free of it, they can talk that way. Yay. Huh. There's somebody in my attic, some creature, who seems to be a little heavy. I can tell the animal, or I can try to tell the animal by the weight, by the sound, how heavy the animal seems by the quality of the sound of its movement. And that didn't seem like a mouse. It could be a cat or somebody seeking the mice. But anyway, metaphysical talk disturbs all sorts of fellows. Sorry. We're not always in the same state. We shouldn't try to be in the same state. And ultimately, the states of mind or being that we seek come naturally when there's freedom from the arising of emotional triggering and wrong view and excessive thought. Much thought is unneeded. And much troubling experience is the result of triggered emotional catharsis, or, you know, triggered emotional release, arising at least. Whether it's released or not depends on how we meet it. But this is akin to what? Melting gold in the fire. The luster is the luster of, I mean, if you melt gold in the fire, I guess it melts, and then it's liquid. So then we're talking about the lustrous appearance of the melted gold. Why is it lustrous? It's because the impurities were burned off. Likewise, the impurities, or the distorting tendencies, the patterns of mind, desire and passion, right? Craving and clinging, tanha and upadana in Buddhism, when they are destroyed or ended or cut off, and along the way, when they're lessened, there is some kind of greater illumination or light of mind, right? As manas takes a seat and or fuses with buddhi or chit, moves to sat, then there's a brighter mind and a brighter feeling in life. And so it's inner work, as he says, activity within, it's exertion within. And you're not always in the same state, so don't try to stay in one state. But honestly, what we seek comes naturally when we free ourselves from what's distorted and, you know, distorted and mistaken view and harmful preferences and attachment to preferences, and old emotional pain or wounding that's unhealed. When that kind of material, lower triad blockage, is released, naturally there's a brighter mind and a greater well-being that has its own longevity. So finally, Om is the city of peace, Om is the form of peace, Om salutation. So that was straight out of trance, I guess. I think that's where we'll end for today. Next time we'll pick up from the beginning of page 17, or the right close to the top of 17, talking about food. The next two verses, that and the next, talk about food, and then fear. And so we'll start from page 17 next time, and I'll finish the next four onto the beginning of 18, and perhaps after that read some of 18 and go on. This will take months and months, which I think is wonderful. So, and I hope you're enjoying it too. So, again, please consider that there's a podcast option at archive.org, or the links on the About page of the YouTube channel. Bookmark, if you wish to continue listening, the podcast pages, so that at least if YouTube goes down or I go away from YouTube, I don't think so, but you know, these days all sorts of good voices are being censored. So if that happens, the way to find these talks will be on the podcast channels, and that's going to continue too. So in any case, please take good care of yourselves, and I hope you're well, and I hope you'll be back next week. Please take good care of yourselves. See you next time, and good night.